This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Ross Kessels
and Vicky Marie Buchanan.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Vicky, you were born in Hamilton and you grew up there?
In Hamilton. I have an elder sister as well. And we grew up in Hamilton until I was 8 years old. And then...
You got much of a memory of Hamilton?
Not so much. I mean, I remember sitting on a bus, my early memory, sitting on a bus going to Peach Grove Kindergarten. And we had a little house that my parents had built in East Street in Claudelands. We went to Fifth Avenue Primary School. And so I started school there, and I remember you could just walk along to school and walk back. Yeah. Home again.
So was it sort of similar to Palmerston North at that time?
It was.
Do you think?
Hamilton is sort of often referred to as the sister city to Palmerston North. Yes, so it was very similar to Palmerston North then. Ruakura, the agricultural
research
centre, it was just down the road. So that was just starting off there. I remember that too. So I was there till 8 years old. My father went into the ministry, so he needed to shift to Auckland to do his training at St John's College. So we sold...
Oh, he was a Catholic?
No, Anglican. Training to be an Anglican priest.
Yeah. Okay.
So they must have sold the house in East Street, and then we lodged with a family around Hamilton. And I remember very distinctly that they had a lounge and they had glass doors, and the daughter, an adult daughter of this family, she was teaching speech and drama, and so she used to have people coming in and they would have their lessons in the lounge. And so I would stand behind the glass doors and I would peek through the glass doors to see and watch what was going on. And one day, Noni, what was her name, she said, "Vicky, come on in and have a little listen to what we're doing." So I went in, and that opened up the world. It really was, for me, like opening up the door and walking into the world of drama, really. She sowed the seed and the bug, and then we were very much involved with the church there too, St. Aidan's Church in Claudelands, and she was producing something, or not producing, but putting together a children's performance, and so I was there doing that, so it just sowed the seed and got me started.
So it was just natural. So it was part natural of your life.
I think she probably recognised the natural talent.
Maybe she did. Okay.
Did you have a very religious upbringing? If your father was training to be a priest?
No, not at all. We had defined religious upbringing, very faith based, and. In fact, Derm questioned, my mother got
That's
involved
father,
in the church,
yeah.
and Derm, my father, questioned religion and really if there was a God and everything. But apparently the story goes that I was very sick and nearly died at birth and was christened at birth. And Derm said, "Well, if there is something in this, by golly, it'll change my life." And I survived. And so hence I'm Vicky Marie for Mary. And that was all done on the spot, but I did survive. And so he got involved in the church, and meaning going to church services and getting to know God, I guess, and following the Bible teachings. And together they were walking the Christian path. Yeah. And they
so did he have a strong faith, or you saw it more?
He did have a faith, because he grew up as a Presbyterian here in Fielding. Yeah. So he did have a faith. It wasn't foreign to him, but I guess his relationship with God changed with that. He was involved in the community, became more involved in the community as well.
Yeah.
So it grew within him.
Okay. And that rubbed off on you?
We've always been, yes, because we've always grown up and gone to church and had Bible teachings. I think through life's journeys, my relationship with God has developed and enriched as well, and God has always been there for me as well. So faith is an important part of me too.
Yeah,
But I don't go and stand on a street corner and yell it to the nations and everything.
Yeah, so you're in Hamilton, then you moved from there?
So we moved from Hamilton up to Auckland, and while Derm was training, and we were in a St John's College flat. I think they just opened up some flats for married clergy or married students. And from there, I started formal drama lessons, actually, speech and drama lessons, but I was always involved down at the bottom of the flats. There was a mini forest, and as kids, we would go down there and create stories and play and all that sort of thing.
So you say drama, you mean outside school, you had extra lessons in drama?
Yes, okay. Speech and drama lessons.
Okay.
And then we had a dressing up basket, and so we would create our own stories, and so I was often leading those stories, and it didn't take much for us all to get involved in that. But as well as that, we had a good old round childhood too. We went fishing trips, the holidays down to Waihee, climbing over all the rocks and hunting for crabs and things like that I loved. We were taught sewing. My grandmother was a daughter of a tailoress, and so sewing was an important part of us, so we sewed. So we, you know, a good old rounded childhood, really, growing up.
If drama was so important, was this was before the time that theatre sports took off?
Oh, absolutely. Way before that. And it was in Auckland where Nairi Lovey was my teacher, and she had a children's theatre, and so we performed in the children's theatre over a weekend and things like that, and so I got into character roles, and it just naturally flowed. You know, some kids are into drama and some aren't, and some are into sport and some aren't, and so for me, drama was just part of me.
So
really.
Socially, was there, I know, say someone who's doing lots of music, it could separate them out from other kids, did you find drama was something that drew you in, connected you up with other children, or you were more a bit different from the other children?
I was a bit different, but I think I was always a people person, and I think it brought us together. I would just go and talk to people and involve people.
So it built your confidence and for social.
It definitely built confidence, and you just inhabit the world and you inhabit characters and. Then you develop the skill. So you play. It's
you inhabit character. So when you meet, I'll talk to you as this character.
I think you naturally, you know, observe characters' behaviour and you can sort of replicate it in many ways. Yeah. You just sort of do it naturally, in my opinion. Yeah.
It's very play-based initially, but it's got a skill to it, and I was learning those foundation skills would be...
So it's a bit like art, where you're actually seeing things more perceptively because you're trying to reproduce them.
Yes, I think so. Okay. It's not just going into a fairy tale world. There is a craft to it. So it's definitely being introduced to that craft as well. So you're not... people will often say, "Oh, what's that term? If you're a drama queen, it's not that. That's what it's not."
There was one time when I was a student. There was the Royal Shakespeare Company who came round, and so I was one of the sort of stagehands there. And I noticed the actor, someone would be saying something, but just a movement of their tongue through their cheek or a slight. This is acting, but it's saying a lot even without it being in the script.
Very holistic.
Yeah. Okay, so Auckland.
So from Auckland, and so that world opening up, then we shifted around because Derm, my father, was ordained, and so we shifted to Te Araha up in the Waikato.
Oh, okay.
And Te Araha was Mount Te Araha, and you've got the natural spring water as well. Oh, yeah. So we lived there for a year, and then we shifted to Matamata for another 6 months. Then we shifted back to Hamilton, and then down to Lower Hutt and Wellington.
Okay, now moving around a lot like that, I know things like, say, army children and so on, it can be quite dislocating, but for you, wherever you go, because of your father's role, you're in a key position in the community, or you didn't notice that?
I would say that the church was a more significant factor in the community back then than it is today, definitely. Did he have a sort of a status because he was...
I'm not thinking so much status, but it's not as if you're there as strangers and you've got to try and make friends. Your family has a role in the church community.
Yeah, true.
That
true.
They'd probably draw you
true.
In. Or...
And the church is a community in itself too, and so you automatically have a family to go to, you know, school mothers will say, you get your kids at school, you get to know kids at school.
Yeah.
Church,
yeah.
You get to know people in the church too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yes, you did. So there was a community and you're welcomed into the community. So you have that.
Yeah. The other dimension, though, might be that those that move around a lot, they've not had long-term friends. Is that something you noticed?
There is that. I've got a friend of... Our mums were in Campbell Johnson Hospital together, and we are still friends today. And she's in Hamilton, still in Hamilton.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I'd end up going back to her, my friend Priscilla.
Yeah.
There is that. But you do have friends in different cities as well, and at the same time you're having different teachers, you're learning from different teachers, you're in different communities, you're getting an insight about different communities, more rural communities versus going back to the city. And I remember once if I mucked up a friendship, and I did once or twice, as you do growing up, I remember thinking once, oh, phew, we're shifting soon, I'll go and start again afresh, learn from that mistake and start again. So it has that advantage too. It was life. I don't think it was a negative. I think it was a positive, really. You learn about shifting. It doesn't become a sort of a thing that, oh my gosh, I can't shift either.
It's easy for you to declutter, unlike
other older people. Yes, very much so.
You have to shift regularly to do that.
Yes,
I think so.
Very much so.
Yeah.
So down in Wellington, that was a significant shift, Hamilton to Wellington. And we went to Hutt Valley High School, and I was still continuing on the drama. And again, same thing, different centres, different drama teachers. You're learning different skills, different crafts from each drama teacher, and I think that was important too for me.
Did you find with the curriculum going from one school to another, you sometimes you were ahead or repeating, or you were behind with
definitely,
stuff?
Definitely. I wouldn't say necessarily country school to city school, but definitely different schools.
Yeah.
And then I went from I went to Hamilton Girls. In the third form, and we had seamed stockings, and we had uniforms down below our knee, and we had to kneel down and check that the uniform was only an inch above the ground when kneeling. We had to wear a hat, Panama hat, and things like that. The girls, Hamilton girls.
Yeah.
Then we came down to Hutt Valley High School, and it wasn't like that at all. It was far...
No, it's just casual, wear what you want?
No, it was still a uniform. Still uniform, but we had a duffel coat in winter time. And no, it was just a little bit, I won't say loose, because I don't think the principal would like to think that, but...
More casual.
It was more casual.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's like in Palmerston North, you've got different schools with different teaching styles.
Say too, Hamilton Girls, I was in the commercial course because I was going to become a secretary, shorthand typer secretary, so I learned shorthand typing. And I learned bookkeeping as well, and we were learning on the Imperial typewriters. So you had the little shield and the it was a manual typewriter, and then the carriage, returning the carriage and everything.
So, and you can still touch type?
Yes, no problem. Shorthand.
So how did you feel you were being pushed into that? Or it's what you just thought those are the only options, or you felt like that would be attractive to you?
I wasn't an academic. My sister was more of an academic. I wasn't an academic in the sense of science, maths, language.
Yeah.
I wasn't one of those sorts of brains.
So you want it practical?
I'm more practical.
Okay.
So the shorthand typing I really got into. I loved bookkeeping.
Yeah.
So I was more on that side and seeing the real practical application to it all. And so when we came down to Hutt Valley High School, they were more academic and didn't have a commercial course. And the commercial course they had for perceived to be the students that were not academics.
Okay.
So we didn't have shorthand, you had typing.
Okay.
And you didn't have accountancy or bookkeeping or anything like that. So I was in that course.
In Hamilton, which was sort of in an elitist, more elitist sort of school, they had all the commercial stuff. And then in the Hutt Valley, which wasn't so elitist, they didn't have it.
Yeah, it's questionable, isn't it? I didn't get into that so much.
Yeah, okay.
Or it could be Hamilton, jobs, shorthand typists versus down in Wellington. Don't know.
If the parents were public servants and thought they'd go, was the idea that most of them would be going to university?
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, because it was at the time that university enrolments were expanding a lot more girls going to university at that stage.
Right, this was not so much then. This was 1970, 71.
University was, when did that
That was starting when I left Hamilton. Waikato University was there, but it certainly grew after then.
Yeah, because by 86 there was a equal number, male, female, of students at university. So you didn't dream of a life on the stage then?
No, I didn't dream of it. It was just part of me, and I was doing the Trinity College exams, I was doing drama. And again, a teacher in Lower Hutt, she was very involved in the repertory theatre there, so we did some productions, some small performances there. So I was being introduced to putting the craft into practice on the stage as well, definitely.
But it was more, you saw it as a hobby though, you didn't?
I saw it as a hobby, I definitely didn't see it as anything career-wise.
Okay.
So that was Wellington, and then left Hutt Valley High School in the sixth form, had a teacher who brought back and really pushed for accountancy. So we started, did do accountancy in the sixth form, and also teaching shorthand. So that was good. So that brought back the shorthand there as well. So she was giving more status back to the commercial course and giving the academic aspects of the commercial course too. She brought that in and pushed for that. So that was good. So then she had a contact, and so I had an interview and began my work and career in the Department of Internal Affairs in the typing pool as a shorthand typist, which I have to say from day one I didn't quite gel with.
This is gliding on?
It was very much like Roger Hall gliding on. And I think that's why I didn't, my whole system went with it really.
Now there's an anecdote about the two of you, isn't there?
There is.
It was in Bowen
State Building.
State Building,
in Bowen
and
Street.
A whole lot of government departments in there, including you, your internal affairs.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you were in the
Forest Service. And there was Wildlife Service there and various other departments, I think.
So in the typing pool, we would have a supervisor sitting at the top, and she had a little platform, and she'd sit at her desk at the top, and we were all back in the typing pool. And every morning, because I was a shorthand typist, not a typist, she would allocate where we would go to have our shorthand dictation, and we would go off and have our shorthand. And I went off to the wildlife department, in the forestry, and this guy said to me, oh, we've just had some young ones and they're just all gone. Oh, okay.
Young men
and they're just all gone off into the field. I said, oh, right, okay. And we got down and did the dictation and went back. Little did I know, one of those men was Mr. Ross Castle sitting here. And he used to come down to the typing pool and put your typing in.
I used to have to take the files around to the, you know, different heads in Forest Service, and often I'd go into the typing pool to pick up the typing and deliver that. And I remember the cabinet where the type stuff was filed.
And that was directly in front of my desk. So I was really cheesed off to hear later, many years later, that we missed it, seeing each other by 11 days. Meeting each other. 11 days.
Yeah.
But we experienced the same experiences, didn't we?
At
the file department opposite the typing pool.
Oh, and the tea lady with the trolleys.
Rose with the bright red hair.
That's
who
right.
Who would, you know, have everyone on. She was a character.
9:25.
You come to work and, you know, there'd be one guy get the Dominion out and read that, and everyone smoked. So.
Yeah. Now, was there sort of, I found in Britain, there'd be some sort of retired ex-military guy who took all the mail round, so they could speak to everyone from the very top level down, and so they were a form of transmission of information around the building.
We didn't have that. Well, in those days, you know, a lot of people were ex-military.
Yeah.
From my desk, you'd look straight into the filing room. It was obviously much bigger than what I could see. And they were we were there at 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock in the morning, you had to be there. And we had to sign on at 8 o'clock. And I could see these guys there. They were certainly sitting there with their Dominion Post, reading and talking and everything. And they'd sort of amble around. I would say it was a good 25 minutes after 8 o'clock when I was away with it. They were still there reading their papers.
So work started at 8?
Yes.
And finished when?
4:35.
4:35. Yep.
But at 4:30 you could pack up, and then we would pack up, and if we were waiting 2 minutes, and it was say 4:33, we would all stand around watching the clock literally go click onto 4:35 and then whoomph. Everybody would head off to the lifts.
So what happened if someone turned up 2 minutes late in the morning?
Well, it was written in a register by the stores room, which was next to the typing pool.
Yes, yes.
And you had to come in and sign in. And it was a bit like a stable door, you know. There were two parts to the door and a bench halfway up where the book was, the register was.
Did people sign in for each other sometimes?
You couldn't annul because it was too obvious, but you'd have to wonder with the filing department.
Yeah. Yes, I know there were factories, at least in Britain, with the machine. You have a card,
and it gets the timestamp thing. Yeah.
But Wellington, you know, all the public servants would all sort of steam off down to the railway station, which was absolutely crowded.
Yes, it was.
Was there a public servant sort of uniform? You'd all wear grey suits? Or
but there was a sort of code of dress, the sort of plastic raincoats for when it rained in Wellington. Briefcase.
And the men had shorts down to their knees and bobby socks. Walk socks, I call them bobby socks, but walk socks. Up to the knees and shorts down to the knees, didn't they? That and a shirt and tie. That was what men wore, wasn't it?
Well, not all of them.
Because the shorts had largely disappeared, I think, by the time I came here in the late 70s.
Yeah, no,
but there was one lecturer also did loads of running and so on at Massey University, and he'd wear the shorts and sort of thing.
The mini skirts were in for the females and platform shoes.
Yeah.
I remember that for the females. Mm. No. So that was our experience.
It was the very early 1970s.
So I lasted in the typing pool 6 months. I couldn't cope with it beyond that, really. And so, but I have to say, it was a good training ground. It was a good training ground for consolidating the shorthand. Certainly, from a typist perspective too, getting the form, the standard of the typing and all that sort of thing. So it was a good training ground.
And so you were doing shorthand for various different people.
Yes.
Were some easier than others? Is shorthand ambiguous at all sometimes?
No, no.
You know exactly what you're
doing? Yes, you do. Yeah, no, it's quite an art form. And then, as well as that, I was going to night school at Polytech to get the Pittman exams and the trade certification exams. So you had a qualification.
Okay.
And I'd have to say that in my family roots too, my grandfather, my mother's parents were tomato growers, and they had grown up straight after the Depression. And so our ethos growing up, and the same with the Buchanan farm too, it was about work hard. You had to work hard,
yeah,
and you built resilience. And certainly from my grandparents, education was important as well. So I know my papa was always instilling in me too, you know, get a qualification, Vic, get a really good qualification and get a job you can go back to in life.
Yeah.
So that was sort of, I grew up with that too.
Was that fairly normal at that stage?
I think so, because you'd hear a lot about the Depression, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's it. It's something I was in economics, and you think each generation, they've got their own experiences, which shapes how important savings are, how important education is.
Yeah. And for our parents' generation, it was the Depression and World War II. And that featured hugely in our upbringing.
And you didn't waste food. And my dad was in St John's College, money was tight, and so it was budgeting. And so we learnt, as kids too, we learnt how to budget. And
you got pocket money?
Initially. No? We didn't. Okay. We did eventually, and we had to work for it. But no, we couldn't afford it.
Okay.
And so Aileen was a superb budgeter too, with casseroles and veggie soups and all those sorts of things. So
skills that are lost now, you think, for a lot of people.
Tend to be. I think they're coming back very much so now.
Yeah.
This is part one of four. Listen next week for part two.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website. And a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.org.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available in all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.